Gentlemen, a strange fatality pervades the whole career of these events, as if verily mapped out before the world itself was charted. The mutineer was the bowsman of the mate, and when fast to a fish it was his duty to sit next him, while Radney stood up with his lance in the prow and haul in or slacken the line at the word of command. Moreover, when the four boats were lowered, the mates got the start, and none howled more fiercely with delight than did Steelkilt as he strained at his oar. After a stiff pull, their harpooner got fast, and spear in hand, Radney sprang to the bow. He was always a furious man, it seems, in a boat, and now his bandaged cry was to beach him on the whale's topmost back. Nothing loath, his bowsman hauled him up and up through a blinding foam that blent two whitenesses together, till of a sudden the boat struck as against a sunken ledge, and keeling over spilled out the standing mate. That instant, as he fell on the whale's slippery back, the boat righted and was dashed aside by the swell, while Radney was tossed over into the sea on the other flank of the whale. He struck out through the spray, and for an instant was dimly seen through that veil, wildly seeking to remove himself from the eye of Moby Dick. But the whale rushed round in a sudden maelstrom, seized the swimmer between his jaws, and rearing high up with him, plunged headlong again and went down. Meantime, at the first tap of the boat's bottom, the lakeman had slackened the line so as to drop astern from the whirlpool. Calmly looking on, he thought his own thoughts. But a sudden, terrific, downward jerking of the boat quickly brought his knife to the line. He cut it, and the whale was free. But at some distance Moby Dick rose again, with some tatters of Radney's red woolen shirt caught in the teeth that had destroyed him. All four boats gave chase again, but the whale eluded them, and finally wholly disappeared. In good time the Town Ho reached her port, a savage, solitary place where no civilized creature resided. There, headed by the lakemen, all but five or six of the foremost men deliberately deserted among the palms, eventually, as it turned out, seizing a large double war canoe of the savages and setting sail for some other harbor. The ship's company being reduced to but a handful, the captain called upon the islanders to assist him in the laborious business of heaving down the ship to stop the leak. But to such unresting vigilance over their dangerous allies was this small band of whites necessitated both by night and by day, and so extreme was the hard work they underwent, that upon the vessel being ready again for sea they were in such a weakened condition that the captain durst not put off with them in so heavy a vessel. After taking counsel with his officers, he anchored the ship as far offshore as possible, loaded and ran out his two cannon from the bows, stacked his muskets on the poop, and warning the islanders not to approach the ship at their peril, took one man with him, and setting the sail of his best whaleboat, steered straight before the wind for Tahiti, 500 miles distant, to procure a reinforcement to his crew. On the fourth day of the sail, a large canoe was descried, which seemed to have touched at a low isle of corals. He steered away from it, but the savage craft bore down on him, and soon the voice of Steelkilt hailed him to heave to, or he would run him under water. The captain presented a pistol. With one foot on each prow of the yoked war canoes, the lakeman laughed him to scorn, assuring them that if the pistol so much as clicked in the lock, he would bury him in bubbles and foam. "What do you want of me?" cried the captain. "Where are you bound, and for what are you bound?" demanded Steelkilt. "No lies. I'm bound to Tahiti for more men." "Very good. Let me board you a moment. I come in peace." And with that he leaped from the canoe, swam to the boat, and climbing the gunwale stood face to face with the captain. "Cross your arms, sir. Throw back your head. Now repeat after me. As soon as Steelkilt leaves me, I swear to beach this boat on yonder island and remain there 6 days. If I do not, may lightning strike me." "A pretty scholar," laughed the lakeman. "Adios, senor," and leaping into the sea, he swam back to his comrades. Watching the boat till it was fairly beached and drawn up to the roots of the coconut trees, Steelkilt made sail again and in due time arrived at Tahiti, his own place of destination. There luck befriended him. Two ships were about to sail for France and were providentially in want of precisely that number of men which the sailor headed. They embarked, and so forever got the start of their former captain, had he been at all minded to work them legal retribution. Some 10 days after the French ship sailed, the whaleboat arrived, and the captain was forced to enlist some of the more civilized Tahitians, who had been somewhat used to the sea. Chartering a small native schooner, he returned with them to his vessel, and finding all right there, again resumed his cruisings. Where Steelkilt now is, gentlemen, none know. But upon the island of Nantucket, the widow of Radney still turns to the sea which refuses to give up its dead, still in dreams sees the awful white whale that destroyed him. "Are you through?" said Don Sebastian quietly. "I am, Don." "Then I entreat you, tell me if, to the best of your own convictions, this your story is in substance really true. It is so passing wonderful. Did you get it from an unquestionable source? Bear with me if I seem to press. Also bear with all of us, Sir Sailor, for we all join in Don Sebastian's suit," cried the company with exceeding interest. "Is there a copy of the Holy Evangelists in the Golden Inn, gentlemen?" "Nay," said Don Sebastian, "but I know a worthy priest nearby who will quickly procure one for me. I go for it. But are you well advised? This may grow too serious." "Will you be so good as to bring the priest also, Don?" "Though there are no auto de fe in Lima now," said one of the company to another, "I fear our sailor friend runs risk of the archiepiscopacy. Let us withdraw more out of the moonlight. I see no need of this." "Excuse me for running after you, Don Sebastian, but may I also beg that you will be particular in procuring the largest-sized evangelist you can?" "This is the priest. He brings you the evangelists," said Don Sebastian gravely, returning with a tall and solemn figure. "Let me remove my hat. Now, venerable priest, further into the light and hold the holy book before me that I may touch it. So help me heaven, and on my honor, the story I have told you, gentlemen, is in substance, and its great items, true. I know it to be true. It happened on this ball. I trod the ship. I knew the crew. I have seen and talked with Steelkilt since the death of Radney.